Welcome to the third part, the fourth part of Pelegish Begiver. I just wanted to recap what we did last time as we plunge into the next stage. We've covered already Perek Yotes. So what we did was we covered the whole incident, the episode of the Pelegish itself. And now, at the end of last week, what we did was we covered the comparison and the... That's fine. We finished the comparison and the differences between the story of Pelegish and Sodom. So just to recap on those comparisons and those differences in order to be able to appreciate what the Mefarshim are about to do. We can't just necessarily jump into the Mefarshim before we have our own appreciation of it. So what I did is I redid the list over here of some of the differences and some of the similarities. What we noticed, first of all, in the blue, was that there was an urgency for the people, the Malachim in Sodom, to stay. As we saw that Lot said, "No, please stay by me." He vayiftzar bo ma'od. He really encourages them strongly to stay by him. Which we see a parallel in the Pelegish story, but the parallel is a little unusual. It's not in the case of actually the host, the old man. It's a little earlier in the story. It's by the father-in-law saying to, in a premonition-like manner, saying to his daughter and his son-in-law, "Please stay." Vayiftzar bom. We saw that there is this parallel trying to stay in a safe haven, which is being set out at the beginning. Just interestingly, for whatever you want to take it for, they both happen to be in Perek Yotes. Sodom is in Perek Yotes of Bereishis, and Perek Yotes of Shoftim is the case of the Pelegish. So that's why there's the psukim that I put on both sides. You can see the Yotes. So that's number one. For those listening to the recording, this will be this is available as well as a PDF on the side of the screen. So the next thing we notice is, as Sally pointed out last time, is just the very simple parallel of the most obvious parallel, which is that the people surround the house in both cases. We have the entire city congregating around that house, trying to evict the guest, and not only just evicting them, but we know that there's this threat of sodomy. Right? They're both using similar words, v'neda'ah or some in Sodom, and v'neda'enu in the case of Pelegish Begiver. Very similar parallel, and again, the very disturbing response of the host in both cases. In the case of Sodom, the host responds, who is Lot, offering his daughters. And in the case of Pelegish Begiver, the old man offering his daughter and the other man's Pelegish. So this is a very disturbing reaction on the part of the hosts. That's as far as the parallels go. Right? And that seems very similar. The words are, in fact, very, very similar words as indicated. However, there are a number of details which are actually a little different. And the question is if we're to make something of them or we're to ignore them and say that those are just simply what happened. That's just simply what occurred in this case. So number one is that we saw in the case of Sodom, there was violence. We saw that when Lot walks out of the door, he actually is actually scared of the people to the extent that the angels have to pull him back for the threat of his own life. Number two is that they try to break the door. We saw those two things occurring in Sodom, which we don't really see in Pelegish. We just see the man walking out, speaking to his brothers. We don't even hear about him walking back in the house. There doesn't seem to be so much of a threat on his own persona, and we're not aware of some of the violence to the greater degree. Moreover, we noticed as well that in Sodom, although people surrounded the house, the psukim got out of their way to tell us that it's not just people, it's every single person in town. Everybody from the entire town is out there in Sodom. Whereas in the case of Pelegish Begiver, we're told about only Anshe Bli'ail. These evil people, right? So it sounds like a select amount of the people. Later on, in fact, we're going to see that when Binyamin are demanded to hand over the perpetrators, they're called Anashim, which is sometimes a term used to describe important leaders of a town. Which may mean that the Anshe Bli'ail mean the leaders of the town, but it's not the bulk populace. It's only certain people in the town. Finally, again, there seems to be a sense of secrecy in the case of Lot. Lot says, "Suruna." When he asks them to come to his house, it isn't a regular, "or just come with me." It's Suruna, which suggests some form of secrecy, which means that Lot is somehow attuned into the climate, whereas the old man just brings them in open arms. It doesn't seem to be any concern about the climate of the city he's living in himself. And the last two distinctions are just something which are, say, maybe perhaps obvious, but are worthwhile adding into the mix for our overall picture, is that in Sodom, we end on a, we'll call it a semi-good note, that the catastrophe of that particular incident is evaded because of angelic intervention. The angels strike the people of the city with blindness, so they're not able to perpetrate what they wanted to. Whereas in the case of Pelagish, unfortunately, it plays itself out. And finally, Sodom is destroyed afterwards. That's an overall difference. Is that in the end of the day, Sodom is killed, destroyed, and never heard of her again. Whereas in this case, there's not only no supernatural intervention. We'll see as we start Perek Chof, which we're going to start today. Not only there's no supernatural intervention. There's actually almost a natural. The natural way the world works is left in place to the extent that they lose the war twice when fighting for the justice of this. So those are the parallels and the distinctions. And the question is going to have to be now, as we investigate this, what do you focus on? Do you focus on the fact that these are really the same story and they're framed in the same words? Or do you say that no, there's something a little bit different which is going to be of significance to us? So that's the question at hand. So on that note, if you wouldn't mind just turning in the booklets to, I think it's page 13, which is where we have the Mephoshim, we discuss this. Page 14 in the booklets. This is what I brought down was the Abarbanel and the Malbim, who discussed particularly this. And now we're a little more in a position to be able to think about the similarities and the differences between them. So the larger print in the center of the page is the Abarbanel. And as we pointed out when we started this section, what he does is he has his regular pirush throughout the text, and at the end he's got what he calls bechinos, or his perspectives on it. So it's page 14 in the booklet. So everybody, if anybody needs, just one second, maybe you would like one. There we are.
There we go.
Okay, so we have on page 14 the Abarbanel. At the end of each section, he has his perspectives. There'll be a little paragraph of discussion on a particular topic. And here he discusses in this Bechina, which is the Bechina HaChamishis, the fifth perspective, he discusses this parallel. And he notices as follows. Mibnei shebnei hageva kivnu b'maaseh hazeh l'chalos haregel mimakomam. Because the people who lived in Giva wanted to stop anybody visiting their place, they didn't want any people to be involved to come to their land. They were actually obligated, or they were liable for death, because of the law of the land. Which is interesting. It sounds like there is a natural requirement. There's a natural requirement to have Hachnosis Orchim, or have regular basic nimusim sensitivities in your culture, and lacking such sounds like there is actually something which is to be which is liable for death. That's what's very interesting over here. Number two, umimnezeh hayu chayavim misam kifiyavim chokam yedini laasos geder v'siyag l'shaar ha'arim v'kol Yisrael v'yishmu v'yirov v'lo yizidun laasos od kadavar adarah hazeh. And therefore, they were liable for death in order to make some form of border, some form of, we'll call it, political or social statement that this should not be done in the rest of Israel, that everybody else should see and never do this terrible thing again. Umimasha Marti, and from the way I describe this, this is the part that's relevant to us, his buyer, it becomes clear, Shahyazeh Hachet Doime Lachatas Sodom Haufucha Komorega. It is completely similar to the sin of what we saw, the incident or the episode of Sodom, which was destroyed in a moment. V'im tomar, and if you're going to ask, lama lo ne'enshu im kein ka'onesh anshe Sodom me'es Hashem min ha'shamayim. So why then were they not destroyed? Why was Giva, the city in Binyamin, not turned upside down like Sodom was turned upside down for their sin? Since their sin, as we point out, is completely similar to what Sodom did, I will respond to you as such. Sodom, the men of Sodom, were not punished on what they planned to do to the angels. Right? Sodom was not punished because of the incident with Lot and the angels. Rather, but rather because of previous incidents. Ukumosho Amarashem is Sporach, as Hashem said, Zaakas Sodom Vamora, Ki Rabo, Vachatosom Ki Chav de Ma'od. Erdon of Era, Kasakas Abuela, Asuchala, which is a Pasuk in Vayera, that Hashem says that the call of Sodom has become to me. I'm going to go down and see if it is as bad as they said it, and if not, I will know what to do with them. It sounds like that before the angels even arrive at Sodom, there's reason to destroy them. So says the Abarbanel, the incident of that occurred with these angels, this potential sodomy which was occurring, that would have happened, was not the reason. It was an indication of the climate, not the reason for their destruction. Right? The fact that when the angels walked in there, this was their treatment, was indicative of the culture that was previously such, says the Abarbanel. Hine, it seems, im kein kodem biasa malachim, kvara yuan she Sodom chayavi klia. The people of Sodom were obligated or liable for death before the malachim entered. The malachim, the angels, are only coming simply to exact that punishment. Amru, as they say, kimashchisim anachnu es hamakom hazeh. As they described, we're coming to destroy this place. Aval ansheki hagiva lo asu hanavala hazos ki im bapam hahi. As terrible as it was, this incident which occurred in Giva, where they raped this lady to death, and where they possibly wanted to kill or sodomize the guest himself, was the first time this occurred. Equally terrible in actual incident, but only once, incidental at this point in time. V'hu haya chet harishon asher chatu bozeh. This is the first time they sinned in this. V'lachen lo hayu ru'uyim lehianesh ka'anshei Sodom. Therefore, they weren't at the same degree liable, meaning to require Hashem to intervene in nature and to absolutely destroy a city. You need to have something which has become part of the culture, something which is an everyday occurrence. This was terrible, but Hashem is not yet at this point going to get involved. Yeah, at this point in time, it was once off, and Hashem is going to leave it to the justice of human beings. Sodom was so bad, Sodom was so terrible that Hashem even had to get involved, which is very unusual. As we see on a day-to-day basis, there are many evil people out there in the world, and Hashem doesn't get involved with it. Really, Sodom was really at the lowest of low. Lefisha Kodesh Baruch Hu Ma'arech L'Rashayim, Hashem gives time for their evil, U'manish Osam K'shinismal Esa'asam, and He only punishes them when their Seah, which means their measure, is fooled. The Torah talks about this idea of a Seah, which is we'll talk about a measure for grain, so to speak, and the idea of Sodom having this reached the point where that cup was full. There was no longer space, there was no longer any room for them to move, and Hashem had to intervene and destroy them. That's because of what they've been doing up till now.
Don't we need Hashem when there is evil? That's when we need Hashem.
We do. We absolutely do. This is a very, very good question. Maybe at some point in time. So? Charlene's question was that isn't where there's evil is where we need Hashem. And this is something which is worthwhile thinking a little bit earlier. You're right. Today it's very hard. It's hard to see when or when not there is divine intervention. But there is something important to realize, and this is for another time, is that in the general course of operation of the world, and we're not necessarily talking about personal suffering, but we're talking about global evil in the world. When there's global evil in the world, the model of Hashem interacting with that is usually in the model of Hashem's soliloquy to Avraham before the incident of Sodom, which is talking about the fact that I'm going to destroy it, there's going to be evil, there's going to be destruction in the world, waiting for Avraham to react. Meaning Hashem gives space for human action usually. Usually Hashem gives space for us to fix that evil in the world. The example being, the Midrash talks about that Avraham was walking along and he saw a building which was burning. And he said, is there no owner to this building? And the owner stuck out his head and said, I'm the owner of the building. And most people understand that this is an argument for creation by design, which means that you look at the world and you see, look how intricate and incredible it is. It must be that it was created by a creator. But in fact, all the details don't fit in with that understanding. Really, it means to say that he's looking at an incredible structure. He's looking at a world of order, but that world of order has fire in it. There's something consuming it, which would almost indicate the antithesis, that there's no order, there's no creation, right? There's order and disorder all together. How can the two coexist? What's Hashem's response? Hashem's response is, I'm here, there is an owner. Validating the fact that there is an owner. So what's the response? Well, how does Avraham react then? The response is to put out the fire. Meaning that just in general, this is a share for another time, but Hashem gives space for humanity in terms of, we'll call it global evil, to change it. It's very unusual that Saddam is an exception to the case that Hashem has to actually step in and take charge for this particular evil in the world. Anyways, worth thinking about in general. But Baba Nel is pointing out that Giva hadn't reached this stage. The tribe of Binyamin had not yet reached this level of liability where Hashem needed to step into the game yet, which is a very unusual and very extreme case. And now that Baba Nel is going to take to task another way of viewing this incident. So up to now, that Baba Nel has established that he thinks that the incident in its intensity, in its atrocity, were equal, just that this is the first of its kind, rather than an indication of a culture of such. Now he quotes the Ramban. Vihine, HaRamban, the Ramban, as we saw before, he's going back 300 centuries, okay? He's going 300 centuries back to the Ramban's Pirush on this, in Vayera. Hishtadel, he tried, lahavdil bein chatas Sodom lachatas anshei hagiva. He tried to make a distinction between the actual sin of Sodom and the sin of the men of Giva. Ulahachbid avon Sodom, ulahakel ba'avon anshei hagiva. And he tried to make more weighty the sin of Sodom and to lighten the sin of the Pilegish Begiva. Okay, so he tried to say that there was actually a difference. And we'll see in a moment how the Ramban tried to do this. He wants to actually say, if you analyze the two incidents side by side, they would not be of the same intensity, says the Ramban. V'loi nichnas b'docha kazeh, and he only put himself into this difficult situation. Ki im lahashiv lesafek asher hiaroisi, ukedei lahakel b'inyan bali hagiva, liyashiv dato shiyazkor lama naflu Yisrael lifnei b'nei binyamin pamayim. He said this, the reason why the Ramban got involved with this is primarily because to understand why the Jews fell, or Israel fell in battle when attacking them, which is about to ensue afterwards in the civil war, that Israel loses that civil war. And the Ramban's very bothered, if they were so wrong, if Giva was so bad, then why was Israel losing that battle? Says the Ramban, it must be that the sin of Giva was much less worse in the actual sin itself than what occurred in Sodom. And he gives you a number of indications of how that's so. We're going to see how the Ramban expresses that in a moment. V'ein kein da'ati, says this is the last part of the Baba Nel, from the period on the fourth last line. V'ein kein da'ati, this is not the way I look at things. Ki avonaseihem hoyu shovim u'misrabim mizdamim ve'echusam. They were the same, and they were equal in their echus, in how they expressed themselves. V'loi hischalfu, they were not different. Ki im ve'hishanos ha'chet v'izdamuso v'nizdamuso. The only difference was how many times this event occurred. But v'nikorim divra ha'emes, he thinks he is so certain about his opinion that he says it's blatantly obvious, the words of truth, that this is what's going on, that these are two equal events. Right, v'hinei herachti boze laharos yosher da'ati. I spend a little bit of time, as we did in the last few minutes, to show you how straight the way I describe things are. Ula'ameis shebnei ha'giva chayavim yisahayu. And to show you now that the bnei ha'giva, the people who lived in this city, were really liable for their lives in this. So what the Baba Nel is doing for us is the following. Baba Nel as a whole is saying the following. Sefer Shoftim was written as the Gemara describes by Shmuel Hanavi. Right, he's looking at events which occurred before his lifetime, but he's codifying them or bringing them, editing them into the story as we have it as follows. And Shmuel Hanavi chose to describe it in very similar terms to the story of Sodom, similar words, in fact, to the extent that when you read it, sometimes the question you may ask is, why are we taught the same story twice? Right? That was what was brought up last week. And the Baba Nel says, it is not for naught that it was done that way. Right? The story is framed in the same way because ultimately it is the same incident. Detail, asterisk, why weren't they killed? Because of the repetition of it. This is the first of its kind. Sodom was the end of its kind. That was the end of many, many years and probably decades and centuries of such behavior. That's the way he views it. So the Baba Nel is focusing on the top half. He's focusing on the comparisons, and he's saying that the Tanakh specifically used those words in comparisons for a reason. That's the focus of our Barba now. In order to understand the opposing or the dissenting opinion of the Ramban, I think it's most clear in the Malbim himself in the box just below. This is a little shorter. But the Malbim sets up, we'll call it a two-part paradigm of understanding how the two incidents actually differed in essence, in the actual quality of the incident itself, not just the quantity. He says as follows at the bottom of page 14, and Shei Sodom hayu chetam mitzara seichel. The men of Sodom, their sin was an intellectual sin. When Sodom sinned, it was an intellectual sin. This is interesting. He's adding in something we haven't thought about up to now. Ki chokuku lohem chukim lotovim mishpatim bal yichyu bohem chayim hadinias. They established laws. They established for themselves laws which were not good, and that they should not live with. That regular, we'll call it, values of society should not be run in their society. V'kiblu alehem, and they accepted upon themselves achukim ha'ele lemishpatim tzadikim, and they accepted these distorted laws, not allowing guests, not involving themselves with their society and betterment of society. They made those as if those were the law of the country, as if those were the standard of operation. Bal yavor orach derech artsan, that no guests should come through their land. Va'over, and anybody who transgresses on such a law, anush ye'anesh kefini musayhem, will be punished according to their laws. V'lo osu mashe osu, they only did what they did. There's a double negative there. V'lo osu mashe osu mibnei ta'avosam. Sorry, they did not do what they did because of their desires. Rak mipnei nimusayhem hanishchasas. They did it because of their sensitivities, which were destroyed, which were disgusting, which were despicable. So that means to say that this no longer was simply anarchy, people running around, doing whatever they wanted, whenever they felt like it, looting, raping, pillaging. This is not what Sodom was. Sodom was a calculated society which took certain values and made those corrupted values part of the way society worked. That's the way that the Malbim understands Sodom. Yes.
It's like Nazi Germany,
for example.
Right. As opposed to, like,
bad people in the United States. Right. So, and in the second last line, he has the flip side. Lo kein anshei ha-giva. This is not the case in the story of Giva. Lo sichlam haya b'ma'al hazeh. They were not thinking about this terrible, about this atrocity. They didn't do this because of the laws of the place. Rak mimnei tavosem. They did the tavasan. They did this simply because of their desires. Shema sheloi he'erichu es ha'ish hazeh ha'haya mibnei ki hayu kilim v'tzari ayim. The reason why they didn't do this was simply because they were stingy people. They didn't want to lose money by giving this poor person a meal. Umash rotzu liv ol oisoi, and the fact that they wanted to sodomize him, hoy mibnei tavasam levad. They just weren't able to control themselves. These were people who were acting like animals. And when acting like animals, it became chaotic. But it wasn't because that's the way the place ran. Now, the Malbim gives a few indications of why his distinction is true. Let's try to think about it. What indicators are there in our story that would indicate that the Malbim, the difference between, we'll call it an animalistic desire run society as opposed to a society which is run specifically in a way which is meant to a morally decrepit way. What indications do we have in the actual stories which support this this thesis?
Well, the fact that Lot was sitting in front of the gate, the important thing that he was sitting before evening before the gates are closed, it seems to he knew that when anyone was caught in the city could be violent.
Right. So the fact that Lot is by the gate, and moreover, when he asks the guests to come in, He already says, you know, take the side route to come to my house, because it sounds like he's aware. It's not like, oh, if there's going to be, you know, wild people around by chance. He knows that this is the way the city operates. He knows what's going on in the city. As opposed to the old man, he just happens to be walking in from the field and he bumps into the middle of town.
I mean, it was the whole, everybody knew that these are our laws.
Yeah, so The fact that focusing on the differences, the fact that in Saddam it was the entire place shows up, indicates that this wasn't just about desires, about people uncontrollable riots. We're talking about the actual makeup of society. You're breaking our moral standards by having guests. And this was an offense to the whole society. It wasn't just the evil people who couldn't hold themselves back and were like animals banging on the door. We're talking about the whole society reacting. There's a little bit of a difference in that. What else do we have? Yes, sorry.
And that's why Hashem had to step in, because they were so immoral.
Yes, so, right, so this is why, that exactly, yes.
I was going to say, because they're violating one of the Shavuot mitzvot, the Nenah, that's why they're Chayav Misa.
That's true. That's true. That's in addition to the to rape and murder, meaning ultimately Anshei Giva as well were liable for the things they did, but the people who did it. But you're saying that the society as a whole were expected to have a court system, and even Saddam was susceptible to that, which we're going to investigate in a moment. I'd like to keep that thought just in terms of. The way that the givers run as a whole. There seems to be a lacking of that as a whole, but you're right. It's much more severe by Saddam, the fact that that they have established a court system in the negative, rather than even...
So maybe that's when they were destroyed.
Right, maybe that's the reason why it was more severe. Because in the Malbim's breakup of things, it's going to come out that why was Saddam more liable, not only just because of the history, but also because it was the way of the land, because it was intellectual as opposed to... uncontrollable people acting like animals. What else, any other indications that are in the story that would suggest such differences?
Well, in Giva, it seems that there was an expectation that people who are in the center of the city are supposed to be taken home. That is the usual way, that's the hospitable way, that usually if you want to be taken home, if you're new to the city, you go in the center and somebody will take you home. The Zakein came and he saw that no one took them home. No one took them home, but there was an expectation that usually they would be taken home, but nobody did.
So what you're saying is that the fact that the default is the fact that he came there expecting that was maybe that was the rule. So you could argue that, but I might hesitate to that. I'll tell you why. Because the reason he may have come to the center of town was because he expects that of other people. But maybe in general it might be true that yesterday they did take in people. They felt a little more easy about their money. But it might have been in fact that they were always tight-handed and never did this. And he came expecting that, and only somebody from out of town actually invited him in. So I definitely hear that. That there seems to be an expectation. What I'm wondering is if the expectation's only from him, or is it also on their side? But I hadn't thought about that. Maybe in general, yes. This was a once-off incident that this occurred. That the people just felt tight-fisted. People then saw his wife or saw him and desired him, whatever the ensued. So this could have been a once-off incident, as you're pointing out.
If we're learning from this, should we have to investigate if someone has a problem? Do we have to investigate their problem before we help them?
Meaning as a guest, as a host or a guest?
Well, the guest. I mean, we're hospitable people.
So you mean the host should investigate the guest, or do you mean the guest should investigate the host?
I don't think so. I think that we're hospitable, and I don't think we should go into the background. I mean, I think when help is needed, we help.
Right. I agree with you. Meaning, as one of the things, if I'm understanding what you're saying correctly, is one of the things which is important to think about over here, mm-hmm. is that in the way it should run, There should be the two-way street. Meaning, the guests should be able to walk in, and there should be safety, and the host should be able to provide it. That's one of the things we can definitely take out of this, in the way it should be running as well. One, two other things to think about, just in terms of that indicator that Malbim suggests as well, is the violence in Saddam is something which he thinks is ideological rather than desire based. That's why over here, although they want something, but they know limits. They do know certain limits. They're not going to break down the door. Whereas in Saddam, it was ideological. They this is the way society was governed. Moreover, when the old man affords an argument. The old man suggests to the people of Giv'ah, he says, don't do this because I'm their host, and also because this is a nevala. This is an atrocity. It's a moral argument. Notice that Lot never suggested a moral argument. He just said, Ki agen barsi b'kotzel karasi, simply, they came to my door, I'm their host. He can't advance a moral argument. Why? Because he knows that this is not the morals don't operate in this city. That's why it would be different. Sorry, Timon, yeah.
There's no indication he threw out the Pelegish. There's no indication that they would not have knocked down the door.
The Tanakh doesn't frame it as such. So, I mean, what we're doing is we're analyzing what we've been told, because we've been told, the way it's been told to us is relevant for our understanding of it. It's true. In the story, maybe if we're getting a blow by blow, but we're not getting a blow by blow. We're getting a version which has been told to us for specific reasons. And in this way of being told, that we're not told about that. So, Shmuel, when framing the story, sees that that's not a relevant point. In framing this incident, so that's the way I would focus on that. Why? Although it's true, if this were to be a stage by stage development, and it was only just telling us the facts of what occurred, then yeah, well maybe they would have. We don't know.
I mean, if he hadn't reacted as quickly as he had,
maybe they would have. Who knows? That's true. Because there's another indication as well, is the fact that in the end of the day, when the Pelegish was thrown out, they didn't try to sodomize the man. They didn't attack the house anymore, which sounds like they were satiated as animals. Right, with her, rather than going further, which sounds like what was at stake, was their desires, acting like animals, right? Whereas in Sodom, maybe if Lot had thrown out their daughters, it's questionable, but would they have been happy with that? No, maybe they wanted to kill the man because he was the men because they were guests. That's another point to think of. What's relevant for this, just to sum up this section, is that the Malbim and Abarbanel. I view this very differently. Actually, the Abarbanel understands that this was as serious and as terrible a crime as Sodom. The reason why it wasn't as potent was simply because it was only the beginning of such an incident, whereas the Malbim understands that intrinsically they were different. The one was an intellectually based crime, whereas the other one was simply people not able to control themselves, which is terrible in the outcome, but in terms of the ideologically, it's much more of a diluted crime. It's something much... Would receive a different type of punishment when looking at it. Now, the one thing which I'd like to just finish on today, and which is worthwhile thinking about, is that one of the themes that we've seen throughout Shoftim, and we know in general throughout Shoftim, is the theme that the nation of Israel never really fully conquered its neighbors, and owing to that fact, they suffered from the influences of the surrounding people. Right? And so we know throughout that they keep falling back in the cycle of Shoftim. They keep falling back to Avodah Zorah, serving the deities around them, being influenced by the people around them. That's what we keep seeing occurring. So, with that in mind, it's worthwhile thinking about these stories. The story of Pesel Mecha and the story of Pelegish Begiv, which are put at the end of the Sefer, don't describe anything to do with the nations around them. There happens to be a city which Bnei Dan conquered in Pesel Mecha, and there happens to be the city of Yevus, which is mentioned, by the way. But the non-Jews, the nations around Israel, are certainly not the focus of the stories that we're reading right now. Right? That's fair to say. However, it may be worth thinking, to what degree is the behavior in the story a function of being involved in the culture around them as well? And I once heard from Rav Shulman, when describing this, he has a shir on this particular topic, Pelegish Begiva, and he pointed out that there's actually a later civilization, not right at this time, which was the follow-on from some of the Canaanite kingdoms, the Phoenicians in Carthage, and what's interesting is they were also servants of Baal, as the Canaanites were, the Baal, the rain god. To the extent that Hannibal, right, who was the famous war general of Carthage, or who waged war many times against Rome, one of the thorns in the side of the Roman Empire, which was developing at the time, Hannibal actually is Hana Baal, right? So the grace of the god Baal. And what's interesting about them is that although we don't have as much indication about this about the earlier Canaanite kingdoms, we do have research done on practices. Of the of this particular kingdom of Carthage. And if you just take a look on page 15, I brought from an essay which was by which was discussing the research, archaeological research done in the 30s in Carthage, which was destroyed by the Roman Empire at the end. In the end, and it says as follows: in the 1920s, and this is a box in the center of the page. In the 1920s, an electrifying French discovery in the ruins of Carthage was reported. The precinct of the Tophet, the cemetery site of child sacrifice, had been found. Other Tophets existed in Punic colonies, for example, Sardinia. Thousands of urns with burnt remains of young children, stone tablets carved with the letters MLK. What's MLK? What does that stand for? No, it wasn't in MLK. It was the same Ugaritic basis of the word. Molech was what the Torah talks about. Don't become involved in the nations around you. Don't burn your children in fire to Molech, the god of Molech, right? So they found thousands of these urns of burnt children, Punic inscriptions dedicating sons of to Baal, and a stele with the inscribed image of a priest holding an infant confirmed the identification. That's in the ruins of Carthage. Moreover, in his own discussion of the appalling atrocities reported during the revolt of the mercenaries, that is one of the battles against Rome, Miles, is one of the authors on this topic, acknowledges the hair-raising violence of this war without pity, marked by infamous brutality, hideous tortures, and butchery. Echoing the words of Polybius, that this war far excelled all wars we know of in cruelty and defiance of principle. So it's just interesting, meaning in terms of, we're talking about, the following cultures that of the neighborhood, of the area, it's a little further than the Canaan area, a little further north, but these Baal-serving kingdoms, that when you go back in time, look in history, there was a lot of cruelty, a lot of torture, a lot of infanticide, which was going on during this time. And you wonder at the same time, when you're going through Shoftim, where there's an involvement in the cultures, and Israel keeps slipping back to their involvement in the cultures around them. What makes you wonder is to what degree is the cruelty which is described in this story? And there's more cruelty to come, unfortunately, on a national scale. But the cruelty which is described in this incident, to what degree is that a function of enculturation among very cruel nations as well? To what degree were they influenced by these nations in this way? That's something worthwhile thinking about as a perhaps an addition to the influence of the Avodah Zorah, which is clearly described in Shoftim. This may be another rub-off, another lesson which was unfortunately learned through their involvement of the nations around them. Something worth thinking about. One has to bear in mind that this may not be necessarily be true, because one has to think about, this story is framed independently of the nation. So what degree are we blamed for totally ourselves, or what degree is it because of the rest of Shoftim and involvement? With just maybe 2 minutes just left to start the 20th parak, we can start thinking about the next section, which will put us in a good stead for the next time, if that's all right. Just 1 minute, so we feel that we're already into the next section. Perek Chof starts on page 4. And we're now, the response to receiving the body parts that this man sent out is as follows, and on page 4 in the middle there. Vayetzu kol b'nei Yisrael, all the nation of Israel left, vatikohel ha'edah ki ish echad lemidan v'ad be'er sheva. That the whole nation congregated, all the people from Dan to Be'er Sheva, v'eretz ha'gilad, and eretz of Gilad, el Hashem ha'mitzvah, to God in mitzvah. To appreciate what this means, on map 2, this is the last page in the booklet, just to appreciate what this means, that all of Israel congregated, you can see on the very last page, on page 21 in the booklets, that on the very bottom left, very bottom left is the dot which says Be'er Sheva. That's the southmost city at these times in Israel. Eilat and the Negev wasn't part of what Israel was yet. And if you take a look at the very center of the land, at the top there's a dot, and it's hard to read a little bit, but there's Dan. Okay? Dan is the very, very top of the page in the center of the land. That dot over there says Dan just below it. So when we say Midan Vad Be'er Sheva, it means the entire expanse of Israel-controlled Canaan at this point in time. Right? Dan is if you take a look at the land on map 2, if you look in the center of that of the land part, it says there's a dot, and just underneath it there's the letters Dalad Nun. It's a little hard to read. Right.
Try the one.
It's a little hard to read there. So then, and I'm sorry about that, and then Eretz HaGilad is on the right side of the Jordan, that's the east side of the Jordan. So when we talk about a congregation over here, just to appreciate what's going on, we're talking about all of Israel, from top to bottom, east to west. This is the most incredible gathering of people, and we're told in the next Pasuk that we're told about how many people, by Yisya Tzfu, back on page 4, Pinos Kol Ha'am Kol Shivtei Yisrael Bikahal, all the tribes of Israel in a congregation, Am HaElokim, the nation of our God, Arba Me'os Elef Ish Ragli, 400,000 people with Or Sholev Cherev, bearing swords. So this is the most incredible congregation. I was the Siyam Ashas in Meadowlands, which was 92,000. We talk about what an incredible gathering of people. This was more than four times the size. Meaning, if you can just imagine the amount of people that are congregating for this cause, it sounds very positive. We hear Hashem's name mentioned twice here. They gather towards Hashem, the people of God. It sounds like a very positive description of the reaction to this incident. And the question is going to be, why didn't it follow through? Why doesn't it seem to follow through that Hashem helps them? Yes, and that's what we're ending.
The guy who decided he this murderer.
Yeah. The man, the Isha Levi?
Who divided her up and said...
He's about to speak to them. He's going to rally the crowds in just a moment.
But is there any justice?
For what he did to her, or... No.
Everyone just thinks he's this great guy now?
Right. Yeah, we're going to see... In a moment, it's going to be ironic. Because, and just ending on this point, it's ironic because they are shaken up by what? What are they shaken up by? By the body parts. They don't know anything about the murder or the rape. Right, they're shaken up by the body parts, which is what he did. Just an interesting point. All they know is that it doesn't sound like even a maybe that there was an indication, but Mitzpah is not his territory. Mitzpah is the gathering point of Israel in Yosef Yeshua. So it sounds like when they hear a calamity occurs, they all gather to Mitzpah because they know there's something terrible about to occur. Anyway, so this is the beginning of now of the justice, which sounds cloaked in very positive notes. But then Hashem doesn't seem to support them in their efforts. So we're going to have to think about that next week. Anyway, thank you very much. Everybody have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Thank you very much for coming.